welcome back to Defrag. I'm Larry Larson.
I'm Gov Maharaj.
And today we're going to cover a couple things that we've got pending with people, and we want to talk about how you you do something here. We'll save that for the end here. But let's get started. First of all, we've got a question that's kind of pending and outstanding from Gelatus on the Channel 9 forum for the last show. And it says, hey guys, I got a problem with my laptop. It's driving me crazy. Bought the laptop, came with Vista 32-bit. Everything worked great. I decided to do a clean install Windows 7 64-bit. Since they love the new OS, let's throw that in there, of course. Went smooth, didn't have any problems. However, he's having a big problem when getting no sound from the speakers, but does get sound from the headphone jack. So, typical ways to step through this problem, what would you look at first? Obviously, drivers, probably the BIOS.
Yeah, one thing that I would definitely look at is updating the BIOS.
Yeah.
Especially where look at where you're connecting the speakers to. You're connecting in the back, you're connecting in the front. A lot of machines have multi-ports that are capable, and they'll only become exposed when you're using the right drivers for that machine. One thing that we found during XP and Vista timeframe is that unless you're using the actual drivers that came with that machine, even though they're like a generic brand like Realtek or SoundBlaster or whatever, you may not get the actual best experience that you're looking for.
Yeah, and this is one of the things that we talked about on the last show, where it's like, why isn't the latest driver for my laptop's, you know, audio card or some other component? Mm-hmm. Why isn't that on Windows Update? And this is exactly why.
Well, yeah, it's not on Windows Update because the driver is generic, mm-hmm. right? So it applies to many, many different types of hardware.
Yeah.
When you have an OEM machine, what they'll do is they'll customize the hardware a little bit. They'll customize the driver a little bit. So when you get the driver from the OEM website, it's actually specific for that machine. And the generic driver, which is what you would get from the original equipment or original device manufacturer, like Realtek.com, for example, that one won't specifically work for that specific model.
Yeah. And so if you had, like, your... they said they had this this laptop running Vista 32-bit. Mm-hmm. So if you had, like, a driver disk that came with that machine originally, could you use the Vista 32-bit driver?
Sure. From Vista and Win 7, you could use the 32-bit driver or 64-bit driver. On 64-bit, you just have to make sure that it was signed.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it should work. What you'll want to do, ideally, is not just use the one on disk, is go to the OEM manufacturer's website and find the latest version of that driver. It may have been created for Win 7. They may have updated it. Mm-hmm. But even if they didn't, there's oftentimes an updated version of the older driver.
Yeah.
So you just want to use whatever is latest if you at all can help it.
Very cool. So waiting for a few more things to hear back from this to keep troubleshooting, mm-hmm. but we are here for you. Let us know how we can help. So next question. So we've got a PC that has several accounts on it, an administrator account and a couple other accounts, and they want to be able to prevent the secondary accounts from accessing applications. And one of the ways they thought they might be able to use AppLocker. What are the best ways to do that? I imagine, like, in my home machine, and I've got, you know, two kids that have kid logins, mm-hmm. and I want to restrict all my amazing software that blows things up from them getting a hold of that.
There's a couple of ways of doing it, of course. You can move the applications physically to a different location where those accounts don't have access.
Yeah.
Typically, if they're standard users, they're in the users group. So the users group has read access to pretty much everything.
Mm-hmm.
But you can, you know, strip that away. You can deny specific access to specific applications. You can deny them via AppLocker rules. You can also deny them via group policy settings. And if you're on, say, the home SKU, you may not actually have access to gpedit.msc, which is the typical user interface that is available on Enterprise and Ultimate SKUs. But what you can do is modify the registry policy keys directly. And you can just Bing for those policy keys to disable specific access to specific exes.
Cool. Awesome. All right. And so next, When a user boots Windows 7, is there a way to only show a single user asked for a password? For example, I have an admin user and a regular user. When the computer boots, I do not want the user to see the admin account. Is this possible? If so, how would an admin then log in?
You can use the... there's a registry key that can hide user accounts.
Okay.
Ideally, though, I don't see a lot of point in hiding the admin account if the user doesn't know password to it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, sure, it shows up, but big deal.
Mm-hmm.
What you can do is also disable it, and it won't show up. And you can always log in if you know the password for the standard user account. You set it up so it doesn't allow changing a password, so you can always get in. And then you can always run an elevated CMD to re-enable the disabled administrator account when and if you want to log into it.
And what's the best thing to Bing for to find out how to do this?
Probably the best keywords are hide user, logon screen, and it's a policy key under the session manager, I believe, user list. There's some special commands that you can use in the registry to hide the specific accounts.
Awesome, and I'll find it and post it in the link in the show notes too, so you can get it there. Great. All right, so this is two questions that we've got here. They're kind of similar, and mm-hmm. they're going to get into how you manage your machine. One is recently someone was visiting and a friend and found that they had blocked SMTP ports.
Okay.
So they couldn't send the mail that they wanted to that way. The second one is someone wants to be able to browse their content without putting it in the cloud. And they've never had much success trying to connect to their home machine while away. More importantly, how do I connect my home computer securely? Mm-hmm. There's a few different ways to do this, of course. If you've got a Windows Home server, you could do it that way. If you've got Mesh, you could do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more interested in how does Gove do it?
I've been using this method for a while now, only because it comes built into Windows. It's a neat little feature. Not a lot of people know about it. But it serves my purpose, which is I have my machine, and I go to different locations, you know, coffee shops, or if I'm on the road in a hotel, whatever. You know, I don't have to worry about which machine I'm on. I always have mine. But oddly enough, this method will work for pretty much any machine.
Yeah.
Any Windows-based machine, anyways. And what it is a built-in VPN server in your home machine.
And is it on every SKU?
I believe it is on every SKU. It's at the bare minimum on home SKUs.
Okay.
So it's on home premium. So if you have, you know, a box lying around, a lot of people do. They set up a machine at home that is always on. This method works pretty well. You know, I've got a server machine at home. It runs, oddly enough, Vista. It's been working well for me, so I haven't bothered upgrading.
If it works, don't try to fix it.
And it's actually kind of interesting. I like to keep it around just to note the differences between Vista, Win 7.
Yeah.
You know, when people ask questions, some of them are still on Vista.
Yeah.
I like to be able to compare it and see, you know, is this actually the case?
Sure. So we've got a machine here that this is going to be your home. We're calling this your home machine.
Mm-hmm.
And it is your home machine. You brought it from home. And let's set this up exactly like we're going to try to get into it from like a hotel room or a coffee shop.
Okay. So this is how we're going to set up as if you're at home. So this is prior to going to the coffee shop.
Yes.
So first thing that you want to do is figure out what your public IP address. So most people at home, they're behind a router. You know, they have their ISP's given router, and then they stick their own router behind it.
Yeah.
And then they serve out the internet, or they serve out the network to the rest of their machines. So there's a very handy website, whatismyip.com. It tells you what your public IP address is.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm connected at work through our wireless, this is the public IP that is being shown. And you know, for everybody out there, whenever you're seeing IP addresses for this particular show,
We're going to blur it. We'll, just to be on the safe side. What the heck? We don't want Gove's machine to get tapped. So
right. So, I mean, this is actually my home machine. So I really would rather not people hammering on it. So you can see that this is the public IP address when I'm connected at work. You'll need that to do something called dynamic DNS. So most home users have their IP addresses change relatively frequently.
Yeah, so I use like WinIP config. You, of course, don't see a number like that anymore because mm-hmm. I'm connecting to my router. You mm-hmm. see the 192, you know, 168.0.
That's your internal IP address.
Yeah.
That one you'll never be able to get to on the internet, at least not directly.
You.
It yeah. will not help you. So you need to have one that is the non 192.168 address or the non 10 dot addresses.
Yeah.
10.10, I believe, is because they're also private IPs.
Mm-hmm.
So this is your public IP. So what you can do is DynDNS will hook up your IP address with a well-known name, remember the well-known name, and that's the thing that you have to remember when you're connecting to
your... So will that get me to my router only? Or
that will get you to your router only.
Okay.
So that'll get you to your public router only.
Yeah.
So that's the one that's delivered by your ISP. What you'll want to do on your router at home is turn on something called port forwarding.
Mm-hmm.
So the port that you want to forward to your home server is port 1723. That's the point-to-point tunneling protocol port.
Okay.
So what you want to do there is get the IP address for your server, your private IP address, your 192.168.something.something.
Yeah.
And you want to take your private router and say, for my public IP address, forward port 1723 to that machine.
Okay.
And that's basically all you need to do on your private router.
And for your router, look up your router model number, look
yes.
up the guide, log into it, probably over a web browser, and you do it right there.
It's just I'm going to leave that as
pretty simple
exercise up to the reader because there's too
yeah.
many different routers out there that
yeah.
you can do it with. Okay, so we've gone through setting up your public name that you're going to connect to.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's set up the actual service on your machine.
Okay.
So this will be the server side portion, and once that's all connected up together, half of it will be done.
Okay. Awesome.
Okay. So what you will want to do is go to your network and sharing center, change adapter settings. And here are your different adapters. You want to hit the Alt key. That'll get you to your hidden menu, which Vista and Win7 have so handily decided to hide. Go to File and say New Incoming Connection. And it'll prompt for elevation. What you do here is you tell your machine what users are actually allowed to connect. So I personally set up a totally separate user that has very limited rights to connect to the machine. In this case, VPN user. You can set up, you know, the different password for it. And this basically says only allow VPN user to connect via this overall method.
Yeah.
So, yes, you'll connect through the internet. Here, what you want to do is go to the properties of your TCP/IP v4 connection. You want to say, yes, allow callers to access my local area network. Most routers at home, you'll have set up with DHCP.
Mm-hmm.
What you want to do in this case is carve out a range of that DHCP, probably in the higher order range, where you know no machines have ever connected to it before.
Yeah.
And you want to just carve out a small portion of those. And say, I want to specify IP addresses that this server machine is now going to hand out to the client that connects over the internet.
Okay.
So I've told it that I want to carve out the range of 10 to 20 here, 192.168.10 to 192.168.2.20, and those IPs are going to be specifically doled out to the clients.
So if I connect this machine, it's going to assign me one of these IPs.
Exactly.
Hopefully it won't butt up against any other things
right.
because they're high up in the list.
Exactly.
Cool.
And because we're doing this on a Win7 client machine,
yeah.
you're actually only allowed one connection,
mm-hmm.
which, again, for most users' purposes, are pretty much all you need.
Yeah.
And then you're going to say allow access. Now, this is my home machine's name, Tangerine.
Mm-hmm.
This is not, obviously, all that you need to connect to the server. What you can do, however, is this is your server. You could go to DynDNS and say, I want to connect to tangerine.dynedns.com.
Yeah.
And you can hook up all of that together with the host name that you created so that when you're connecting, you're conceptually connecting to this machine. You don't have to remember a whole bunch of different names.
Yeah.
So that is the server portion. You can see that this is now set up. There's no clients connected, but it is now basically set up to allow for those connections. I can leave this machine running, take another machine, try to connect to it, and now we'll go through the portion of creating that client-side connection.
Let's do it.
Okay. So back in the network and sharing center, what you want to do is set up a new connection or network. You want to connect to a workplace, which obviously is not really connecting a workplace, but this is the VPN connection portion.
There's a lot of workplaces with VPN, so...
Right. So what you want to do is create a new connection, and you want to use the internet. So this is on a machine that, you know, you have with you. This could be your friend's machine at a friend's house. You need to connect back to your home system.
Mm-hmm.
This is a machine where you're at a coffee shop.
Yeah.
So... And here what you'll do is put in the address of the server that you're trying to connect to, your DynDNS address.
Mm-hmm.
So for the show, I created defrag.dyndns-work.com. And you can call it VPN connection. You don't use a smart card. You're not allowing other people to use this connection. Don't connect now. Just set it up so I can connect later. Okay, and then here what you'll want to put in is your username and password that you set up on your server machine.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just put that in. You can say remember this password if you want to. For my particular machine, it is govum-del@home. And it would be VPN user. And the password is that. Domain is
the
optional.
Or govm-del@home, that's the machine name.
That's the machine name, yeah. So that will now create, and I don't want to connect now, I just want to close it. So here's some additional steps to better improve the security connection. So this guy, what you want to do is go to properties, notice that you're disconnected, go to the security tab. The type of VPN that it is point-to-point tunneling protocol.
Mm-hmm.
And here, you want to use maximum strength encryption. Everything else, you can leave alone.
Do you know what type of encryption that is, the maximum strength?
Yeah, the Microsoft CHAP V2.
Okay.
And you have, you know, other different options here. You can time out things. You can set up additional sharing, but I don't need to do that. And there you go. That's what it looks like. Now, I have this one pre-configured, so I'm going to use defrag to connect to the machine at home. So now we are connected, and remember when I showed you the what is my IP address?
Yes.
Okay. So I've connected now to my machine, and I've essentially said all of the internet traffic from this machine should go to my machine at home.
Yeah.
So we're going to refresh this, and there you go. We have an entirely different IP address. This is my public IP address of my machine at home.
So now if you're in a coffee shop, if you're in a hotel or something, you're connecting and browsing through your home PC.
Yes.
You're not going out on the internet from the coffee shop.
Exactly.
And it's a secure connection.
Exactly.
Encrypted.
Yes.
Very cool.
So this is a great way to not expose a lot of your information. You know, if you're disconnected over Wi-Fi, as I am now, unsecured Wi-Fis, like most Wi-Fi hotspots have, this encrypts all of all that information, so you can't be sniffed out as easily.
And it also satisfies the person's question, how do I get past the SMTP?
Exactly. So once you do this, you can use your mail program. I'm assuming it was Outlook Express, Windows Mail, whatever, an actual mail client. That will tunnel all of the information over the PPTP port, and you'll be able to use your mail and everything, no problem.
And what are the other benefits of this? I mean, you can connect to your printer?
I can connect to anything that is on my home network. So any machine that is currently on, I could actually connect to machines that are off if I sent it a wake on LAN packet, mm-hmm. if I really wanted to. So I can access my home machine just like that. I can browse to everything.
Careful here.
Everything is safe.
Yeah,
everything
okay.
is safe. You know, I have complete access to my files. I can print to my printer, assuming that it was on. I've got a RAID server on my machine at home.
Yeah.
I actually have a picture frame mounted in my house that connects to my server that its sole purpose is just a monitor, and its sole purpose is just to display moving pictures and videos and stuff on my
cool.
wall.
So like I could be in a hotel room, I mm-hmm. could copy my pictures to that directory and have them show up on the picture frame at home for everyone so they can see what I'm doing while I'm
Absolutely.
Out. Very
Absolutely.
Cool.
So right now the way that I went to it was with the name.
Yes.
Normally you'd not be able to do that because there's nothing to resolve the IP address.
Yeah.
So what you would do in that case is start an elevated command window
mm-hmm.
and go to Windows System 32 drivers etc modify your hosts file. You need to do this from an elevated CMD window, or you can elevate Notepad. I do everything from an elevated CMD anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So then you can, this is my private IP of my server at home, and that's the name that I could call it. I can call it Foo if I really wanted to.
Yeah.
But this is so I don't have to remember it, although I do scarily enough remember all of my IP addresses.
Yeah.
I could tell you which device has which IP address at any given time.
And what's a method that you would use to send a wake on LAN to turn another machine on?
Oh, there are multiple applications out there that'll send a wake on LAN packet. I think, you know, there's one called NetAwake. That one is for the iPhone. You can search for any wake on LAN utility Windows 7.
So you'd use a third-party application to do that, though?
Yeah, as far as I know, there isn't a built-in method
mm-hmm.
for sending a wake on LAN packet.
Okay, and what do you need to know to use one of those? The
you just need to know the IP
address,
you need to know
and
the IP
it's address. the fake IP address.
Yeah. Yeah. So once you've connected in, obviously you'll need a machine that is configured for your server. Once you've connected
yeah.
in, if you had another machine sitting on your network that was asleep or in hibernate or something, and you needed to be able to access it, you could send the wake on LAN packet.
Yeah. So are there any other benefits to this as opposed to like Mesh or the Windows Home Server logging in that method other than, I guess you don't have to have a Windows Home Server and you don't
yeah.
have to install anything for Mesh.
And that's a big benefit, is not having
mm-hmm.
to install anything. I can take this configuration and go to any machine that I want to and set it up. You know, I don't necessarily like to have stuff stored in the cloud, but here I can have, you know, whatever I want stored on my home
yeah,
server.
Every hard drive you have.
And I don't have to worry
accessible.
About upload limits either. So
mm-hmm.
a lot of cloud storage, you know, you have a limit on what you can upload. Here,
yeah.
it's like if I need a file that is 100 gigs in size, I can copy it. It'll take a while, but I can still copy it.
Excellent. Awesome. Well, that's it for this week. So send us your questions, defragshow@microsoft.com. Leave your comments in the comment section for the Channel 9 show. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks again.